One of the most basic fundamental American values is the idea that public discourse should be free and open and unfettered. First Amendment protects the freedom of speech in the press for exactly that reason. One of the most common arguments in favor of free speech is that the truth is always more powerful than lies and falsehoods. If you just leave the public square open, the truth will eventually win out. What if that's not always the case? What if we find ourselves in a situation where lies and falsehoods are actually in some ways more powerful than the truth? That's something that a lot of people have been talking more and more about in recent years. And now, Philip Napoli, a public policy professor at Duke University, has published an article in the Federal Communications Law Journal suggesting that today's digital media world in some ways actually favors falsehoods over truth. The article is called What If More Speech Is No Longer the Solution? And he joins us now here in the studio. Dr. Napoli, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
So, first of all, let's talk about the kind of the underlying assumption that kind of lies behind the approach that we typically take to, well, let's just throw open the playing field, do as much speech as humanly possible, and let the truth win out. You referred to it as the counter-speech doctrine in your article. What is that, and what are kind of the assumptions behind that?
Yeah, counter-speech is the idea that the truth is inherently capable of winning out over falsity. So the idea is that essentially more speech is always the best solution to overcoming false speech. It has a long tradition in our First Amendment decision making. It has a long tradition in how we've actually regulated media and speech, political communication, political advertising. It's taken shape in a variety of ways.
So that's the underlying idea, and you mentioned that sort of being the underlying kind of idea behind the First Amendment. So this goes back several hundred years. In those several hundred years, we've always had fake news. We've always had kind of bias in the media and all the things that we complain about today when we look at the state of things. So what is new about the state of the media today that is different from what we've seen before, if anything?
Yeah, that's exactly the question that motivated this research. And it seems like there is a set of factors, that it's actually a combination of factors. There is, I'll try to run through sort of a laundry list quickly. On the one hand, there is the way the economics of legitimate news have changed and have been undermined, and that it's an economic environment today that's very challenging to produce legitimate news. Whereas, on the other side of the equation, the economics of producing falsity are essentially unchanged. It's still very cheap, you know, very easy to produce false news. False news doesn't require reporting and fact-checking and all those sorts of things, all those expenses. So that's one. Another is the difference in terms of our ability to differentiate between legitimate and illegitimate sources of news. The social media environment in general facilitates a level of deception that really was not possible before. The internet as a whole really does facilitate that. Just this past week, the latest revelation is that now we're seeing Russian trolls create local news sites, essentially fake news disseminators that are masquerading as, you know, the Durham Gazette or the Chapel Hill Times. Totally fake local news sites that look like, walk like, sound like local news sites, but in fact, you know, fundamentally about disseminating misinformation.
Is that a brand new kind of phenomenon?
It seems to be the latest wrinkle, yes, or at least, in, you know, the most recently discovered wrinkle. And then you add to that the speed at which false news seems to travel relative to legitimate news. We see, and a lot of data shows this, that in fact, false news stories tend to get shared on social media platforms more widely than legitimate news stories. And that was always one of the fundamental tenets of the counter speech. It actually began with the qualification, if there be time to combat falsity. Now maybe there is no longer time. That essentially the speed at which content can go viral and is such compared to, again, our previous generations of media, that it's another thing that sort of tilts the balance in a way that favors falsity over legitimate news to an extent that wasn't the case in the past.
Yeah. Speaking with Philip Napoli again, the article we're talking about is called What If More Speech Is No Longer the Solution, published in the Federal Communications Law Journal. What issue was it published in? Do you remember?
I'm going to say 70 off the top of my head.
Okay,
I'm not
cool. So recently.
It's just available on the website.
So one of the things that you just mentioned that I've always found particularly concerning, and I know this just from looking at kind of the back door of our own website, which is that the articles that get the most clicks and the most page views are the ones that invariably have kind of the more sensational headlines. The more boring your headline is, the less likely it is you're going to get 100,000 views, whereas you've got an article that's more sensational or more controversial or makes a more provocative statement, that's going to get more page views, and you expand that out to the entire field of news media, then you have the articles that are the most sensational, the most provocative, the most kind of controversial, and oh my God, this horrible thing has happened. Those are the ones that are going to get the most page views, and those are also the ones that are most likely to just be made up, right?
Yeah, and that's the natural extension of, you know, and again, these are problems we've had in journalism for years.
Yeah,
yep, there's, you know, there's all sorts of incentives towards sensationalism, but some of the defense mechanisms we've had in place to keep sensationalism from tipping over into outright falsity and disinformation are no longer as strong as they used to be. The gatekeepers have changed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the number of outlets we can access through that sort of social media funnel, and how little our social media platforms have done, at least up until recently, to try to weed out the true from the false in terms of news sources, the legitimate versus the illegitimate. That really has not been there. Those sort of safeguards have not been there.
Yeah.
So it makes it, so all these systems are in place to essentially create a tipping point that's starting, you know, that favors falsity over, you know, to an extent that was not the case before.
So what's the consequence of that? I mean, one of the things that you talk about in your piece, and that this is just sort of generally, I mean, I noticed this among my friends on social media, I notice it in myself, that we tend to gravitate towards the news articles that sound right to us, which is to say the ones that kind of reinforce our preconceptions.
Mm-hmm.
But to say that is to say, well, we get a whole bunch of, you know, this huge barrage of fake news, we're going to accept the fake news that already that reinforces what we already believe. So how does fake news change what we already believe or how we act on it?
And, you know, and that's the interaction we have now between, you know, the filter bubble phenomenon, mm-hmm. which probably folks are very familiar with, is something that we were concerned about before the fake news concerns became as prominent as they were. And these things can reinforce each other in really powerful ways. So if you already have a social media platform that is oriented towards feeding you the information that does reinforce your existing positions, you are much more likely then, of course, to be exposed to the fake news that reinforces those positions. But most importantly, too, you're less likely to be exposed to the factual news that would contradict the false news. So not only is a way of letting the falsity through, but it's also a way of defending against the truth.
Mm-hmm.
So it really works on both sides of the equation.
So it's not that, like, if I'm a progressive, I'll all of a sudden become a Trump supporter by getting hit with a barrage of 100 fake news stories about Trump, but I might get hit with a barrage of 100 fake mm-hmm. news stories on the other side that'll just mm-hmm. reinforce any false beliefs that I might have.
Right.
Yeah.
And so the reality is, too, really, who we have to worry about the most in this equation are, and this is typically the case with elections, is this fairly small percentage of the electorate that is undecided, that mm-hmm. is vulnerable, that is impressionable, and that actually traditionally, research tells us, has been uninformed.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a difference between uninformed and misinformed. And that's
yes.
really the real challenge we're dealing with today. The voters who might not have been engaged, might not be familiar with the issues, then becoming voters who are now particularly vulnerable to being misinformed and adopting positions and beliefs that are based on false information.
And speaking again with Philip Napoli, Duke Professor of Public Policy, so what do we do about this situation? Who is responsible mm-hmm. for taking action, and what action needs to be taken?
I think that there's a list. It's not any one entity. I think on the one hand, one of the implications of the work we did is it raises some questions about, in fact, how the philosophy that underlines how social media platforms operate. Counter speech is very much part and parcel to how these platforms have operated up until now. In fact, if you look at how, for example, Facebook utilizes fact checks
mm-hmm.
In their social media. One of the things they've been trying to do is compensate for exposure to false information. So if you get a fake news story in your social media feed, Facebook won't, they did this and then they abandoned it. They won't tell you this is false, according to a fact checker. What instead they will do is just give you some links to some alternative news stories, essentially trying to facilitate counter speech, right? Mm-hmm. Twitter, YouTube also have very specific programs that have been designed to try to encourage the production of counter speech. So that, to me, might be a, you know, exercise in futility.
Yeah.
So it suggests their strategy
really
might need to change.
That
they, you know, and it also then would require us to be potentially, which is, you know, doesn't feel so comfortable these days, be more accepting of more aggressive efforts on their part to police fake news. You know, these platforms are actually scared to death to tell us about all the ways they can utilize artificial intelligence and algorithms to identify and suppress fake news. They can actually do that pretty well, but of course, in so doing that, they do raise all sorts of red flags, and particularly, you know, certain sectors of the population that certain viewpoints might be getting suppressed.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one. And then, of course, it really puts a lot of the onus on us. You know, we have sort of abdicated, there we go, a lot of our responsibilities as media consumers, as news consumers, to these platforms to do a lot of the work that we used to do. You know, it is still possible to just go online, visit a news site directly. That's how we used to access mm-hmm. our news online, not wait for it to be fed to us. The whole internet, and thanks to social media, really has evolved from what we've traditionally called a pull medium to now a push medium. It all gets pushed to us via social media, and we do a lot less of the work we used to do in terms of identifying and evaluating sources.
That's a really interesting point, the difference between a pull media and a push media. Say more about that. How does that kind of manifest itself?
Yeah, and it's funny. It's terminology that really arose in the 90s
as the
internet was first developing, and people used to say television was the push medium. It was the lean back medium. It was the one you consumed while sitting on your couch,
mm-hmm.
whereas the internet was the lean forward medium. You had to be more active searcher and information seeker, and you did it at your desk and all these things that don't apply anymore to how we do these things. But the reality was it was such a fragmented and sort of wide open space, and the tools, you know, to access it, you know, you had search engines and not much else. But really now social media supplants a lot of the actual searching and, you know, and directed information seeking that we used to do. So it makes the internet more of a, you know, more like, you know, it's, you know, social media platforms are broadcasters, really.
Mm-hmm.
Just much less discerning about what they broadcast. They'll broadcast anything you put on them. And so that's really how the dynamic has changed.
Speaking again with Philip Napoli, and the importance about, I think, personal responsibility is absolutely vital, and the responsibility of companies, mm-hmm. right, like Facebook and social media platforms. I think, New York Times, I think, recently this week posted something on their website with just a long list of other reputable news outlets besides themselves and mm-hmm. said, hey, don't just rely on us, go to mm-hmm. all of these other sites. So mm-hmm. it's on just sort of traditional media outlets as well to sort of foster that mm-hmm. That sense of responsibility, and here's the right thing to act.
And it's on us to do the work, not get lazy about how we decide what are reputable news sources. One of the things we do know now is that, in fact, the most influential source in terms of determining for us whether we find a news source to be trustworthy or not is whether members of our own social network find mm-hmm. it trustworthy or not. So the people who are already part of our filter bubble, they tend to be the ones who can dictate for us what we see as trustworthy. And, you know, that might not be the ideal.
Yeah. Speaking again with Philip Napoli, and it's such an important point to make on Election Day, because we're just hit with such a barrage of slanted or mm-hmm. false kind of advertising, really, disguised as news from people in our mm-hmm. social media networks and in, you know, advertisements and marketing, targeted marketing campaigns and things like that. And just the same with news. It really underscores mm-hmm. the extent to which we have to take responsibility to say, okay, this is the information that I'm getting. How do I know it's reliable, right?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. What else can people do to find out more about this issue? Where can people go?
I think what, you know, people need to do, I mean, and thank, you know, in many ways it's a very good thing that the recent congressional hearings about Facebook and data leaks and all that sort of thing have brought this issue to the forefront. I think what people need to do first and foremost is really drill down into the social media platforms that they rely on and see what kind of tools are there for them. People aren't aware of the tools they have that can, they can filter content and not filter content. And also see, you can find out, for example, Facebook will provide you now information, will tell you everything that it knows about you. Sadly, we're not as empowered as, say, the folks in Europe are going to be as of this month, in fact, when there's a lot more protections of our personal data. Because all the ability to really make fake news effective all stems from the ability to target those who are most vulnerable. Mm-hmm. More often, and if you're not in that category, then a lot of this really, bounces right off of you. But if you are, and that, it doesn't have to be a large portion of the population. As we know, it doesn't take a large portion of the population to swing an election one way or the other. These things are always very, narrowly decided.
Are you optimistic that this is going to get better in the future?
I am optimistic that it's going to get better. I really do think we may have bottomed out, but it's going to be a constant arms race. It's going to be, not unlike any other sort of challenges we've seen in the technology sector, where the good actors and the bad actors are constantly racing to outsmart each other.
The article is called "What If More Speech Is No Longer the Solution?" published in the Federal Communications Law Journal. Philip Napoli, thank you so much.
Oh, thanks. My pleasure.